everyone, and welcome back to the World of Sharks podcast, a podcast all about sharks, rays, and the ocean that they call home, brought to you by the Save Our Seas Foundation. My name is Isla. I'm a scientist and science communicator for the Save Our Seas Foundation, and every episode I sit down with experts in shark science, conservation, education, and storytelling to take you on a deep dive into a different part of the wonderful world of sharks. Today's episode is a bit of a first for the podcast because rather than learn about someone's research or a conservation project, we are actually breaking down a viral news story. This story first came out in February, and ever since it has been all over the internet. It's been all over TikTok, it's been shared far and wide, and it has even made it to Saturday Night Live. Today, we are covering the story of Charlotte the Stingray. For those of you who don't know or haven't heard, Charlotte is a round stingray who lives in a small aquarium in North Carolina in the United States. And up until 2024, she had lived a relatively uneventful life. That is until one day, volunteers at the aquarium that she was living at noticed that Charlotte was looking a little rounder than usual. To their immense surprise, Charlotte had become pregnant. And the reason why it was so unbelievably unexpected is because there were no other male stingrays in her tank. Now, how Charlotte got pregnant, seemingly without the presence of a male of her species, caused a ton of confusion. And since then, theories as to how this might have happened have flown around social media. Some of these theories are more plausible than others, and that is exactly what we are going to be talking about today. We're going to have a little bit of fun exploring this story, diving deep into some of those theories and explaining why some are possible and some just aren't. Because this story is a really cool opportunity to talk about some of the more unusual reproductive behaviours of sharks and rays, one of which involves females producing offspring without the need for a male. And to help us unravel this mystery, I have invited friend of the pod, shark scientist and science communicator, Dr. David Schiffman, back onto the podcast. Regular listeners will recognise David's voice. He's been on before on an episode called Do Sharks Matter, where we discuss the ecological role of sharks and their importance in the ocean ecosystem. It's a really good and super informative episode that I would highly recommend checking out if you haven't done so already. We also dive deeper into David's career and his research in that episode and talk a lot more about his fantastic book, Why Sharks Matter. So please do go and give it a listen. It's one of our earlier episodes. But for those of you who haven't listened before, you may also already know David. He's very active on social media. You can find him across all channels by following at Why Sharks Matter. And he devotes a lot of his time to answering people's questions about sharks and talking about topical issues relating to them and marine conservation. David is also an incredibly accomplished marine conservation biologist with over 50 peer-reviewed publications across a range of subjects, including marine policy and sustainable fisheries. The reason I invited David on the podcast to talk about this is not only because he is an excellent communicator, but also because he wrote an article on Charlotte the Stingray for Southern Fried Science, a science journalism website which is also rather excellent. I will leave links in the show notes if you'd like to go and check them out. But in that article, he breaks down all the possible theories behind Charlotte's pregnancy, which is exactly what we'll be doing in this episode. We'll also discuss why this story went so viral and what this kind of publicity could mean for shark and ray conservation and public perception of sharks and rays. This episode is meant to be a bit of fun. I think everyone was captivated by this story for a month or so, so it was really fun to actually discuss it in detail and have a bit of a laugh while also learning about the weird world of shark and ray reproduction. And we get our teeth sunk into the most likely theory for what happened, a zoological phenomenon known as parthenogenesis, which is just, I'm going to save it for the episode, but it's just mind-boggling. It's so incredibly interesting. Okay, without further ado, close down those apps, put your phone away, get ready to visit the weird world of asexual reproduction, and let's dive into our episode. Hello, David, and welcome back to the World of Sharks podcast.
Thanks for having me, Isla. Pleasure to be back.
Oh, it's so much fun to have you back on the podcast. Loved our last episode. We're doing something a little bit different today in that we are sort of capitalizing a little bit on the sort of star power of Charlotte Stingray, which has kind of really grabbed people's attention. And we're going to dive deep into that story.
It made it on Saturday Night Live last weekend. That is a new level of goofy viral ocean news fame for me. I haven't seen it since hasthewhaleexplodedyet.com.
That's pretty epic. How did they introduce that? How did that story come onto Saturday Night Live?
It was part of the weekend update where they do the sort of riffs on the news. And then they had one of the cast members was being Charlotte the Stingray and claimed that Michael Che, one of the other cast members, was the one who had impregnated her. And it was very funny. I will leave it at that, because I know you have some young ears on your podcast.
We do, but just in case anyone wants to go and check that out, I'm sure it's on YouTube. But that is wonderful, wonderful news. And yeah, we will be talking all about that in this episode and sort of diving into the mystery, the enigma that is Charlotte the Stingray. But before we get into that, I just wanted to catch up with you and find out, you know, what have you been up to since you were last on the podcast? Because I think it was it 2021 that you were last on?
Maybe 2022. Yeah. I'm not sure. The last few years have been kind of a blur. But keeping busy here. I'm teaching a class for graduate students on field research methods for shark science. So they get to spend a few days on a research vessel with me in Florida and learn how to tag sharks and take measurements from sharks. That's coming up in a couple weeks, and I'm excited. I am one of the three co-chairs of the upcoming International Marine Conservation Congress that'll be in Cape Town in October. And I know Save Our Seas folks are doing a lot for us there, and we're excited to get to see people and to come back to beautiful South Africa. I'm working on my second book, which is all about sustainable seafood. So keeping very busy here.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. That all sounds amazing. But you sound like a very busy bee, as you always are. And we will also leave links in the show notes as well. If researchers are listening and they want to apply for that IMCC.
Wonderful.
I will be there, hopefully, and it would just be great to connect with you again. And that course sounds absolutely amazing. I bet so many of your students are looking forward to this as well. I wish I could come back to school and do it.
It's the second year we've run it, and it was a lot of fun. And so if you ever are in the US, let me know. I have guest speakers come out with us, and they get to go shark tagging in exchange for talking to my students about alternative career paths.
Oh, I would 100% do that. Okay, I will email you after this episode. We will not do it on the podcast, but yeah, that sounds like so much fun. But you'll also remember from last time that the first question we usually ask our guests is, what is the most memorable experience that you've had in the ocean? But because you've been on before, put a slightly different spin on it. So have you had any memorable kind of shark related experiences or sharky experiences since we last spoke to you?
Oh, since we last spoke. So I got to travel around the world on a book tour for Why Sharks Matter, that I think I was for the book that I spoke to you last. And I got to travel around the world and go to 58 cities and counting, talking to people about shark science and ocean conservation and my book and marine biology and stuff like that. And I got to go to 22 aquariums all over the world and go behind the scenes. It was absolutely amazing. I absolutely loved it. A particular memorable experience. I got to talk about why there are not sharks in Antarctica when I was in Antarctica. Does that count?
that definitely counts.
So I've now given an invited professional lecture on all seven continents.
That is quite an impressive achievement.
Yeah. There are skates there, which is pretty cool.
What kind of skates do they have there?
There's one called the Antarctic skate. Scientists are very clever with the common names. But there's several of the Bathyrajas, the weirdo deep seas. Britt Finucci just published more observations of deep sea weirdo skates in the Antarctic.
Yeah, and we've had Britt on the podcast before. Listeners will know who you're talking about. But I was also thinking, just as you mentioned that there, that would be a great podcast, No Sharks in Antarctica. You know, like no such thing as a fish. That kind of vibe. You should definitely have some sort of badge that says you have now delivered a lecture on all 7 continents. That's quite an achievement.
Yeah, there can't be that many people who have done that, right?
No, definitely not. That's really, really cool. Well, congratulations on that.
Thanks.
And also congratulations on your second book.
Always keeping busy.
That's it. Always grinding away. But you came on last time to talk about your book, which at that time had just come out, which is Why Sharks Matter, mm-hmm. which I have on my bookshelf just over in the corner over
Excellent.
There. And I would highly recommend, if listeners haven't read it, to, you know, try and get your hands on a copy. It is a fantastic book. And again, we'll leave links in the show notes as to how you can find that. And yeah, looking forward to your next book. Can you tell us anything about that?
It is a guide for concerned consumers about the world of sustainable seafood. So a lot of people sort of vaguely know that some fishing methods are bad for the environment and sort of vaguely know that sustainable seafood exists and sort of vaguely know that it's confusing, and trying to clear up some of that with the goal of making sure people can make smarter environmental choices while still getting to enjoy things that they love.
Great. Yeah, because it's such a minefield. I mean, a lot of people think that all fishing is the same, and you know, there's so many different types, which, as you said, have lots of different types of impacts and different levels of impacts as well. And it can be really bewildering if you're trying to make a choice about how to eat seafood sustainably or whether you can even do that, you know. So it's really good that you're breaking that down for people, and I very much look forward to reading that when it comes out. Do we have like a date?
I'm turning in the first draft in July, so probably sometime next year.
Oh, that's very, very exciting. Well, maybe you can come back on the podcast when that does come out. That would be excellent.
That'd be great.
So that's kind of everything that you've been up to since you were last on the podcast. But we do have a topic that we are diving into today, and that is the story of Charlotte the Stingray. Now, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be familiar with this. It kind of took the social media world by storm. As you said, it's been on SNL.
Oh my God, yes.
But for the people who have maybe been living under a rock and haven't heard this story, I thought a good place to start would be to actually recap what on earth we are talking about here.
Sure. So there is a small shopping mall aquarium in Western North Carolina in the United States, far from the ocean, small rural community. And in that aquarium, there is a round stingray. And that round stingray's name is Charlotte. And despite there being no boy stingrays in the tank, Charlotte is pregnant. And this led to a lot of goofy speculation about what could possibly be the cause of this pregnancy, given that there is not a daddy stingray available in the tank. And a lot of just straight up goofy nonsense was shared by people who should have known better. And this is looking like it's going to be another year, I always track this, where the most discussed shark or ray story on social media of the year is not true. This happens a surprising amount of times.
I bet. But it's that kind of really wild, wacky story that sort of seems to spread across social media like wildfire. And then it's like Chinese whispers, right? Someone's heard something from someone else, and then it elaborates from there and grows arms and legs and becomes this huge story.
Yes.
And the theories around this are particularly wild, which we're kind of going to get stuck into in a bit. But
yes,
just to give people, you know, an idea of like the level of where the story has reached to, you know, it's been all over TikTok. It's been all over Twitter. I still call it Twitter. I can't call it X. Sorry, Ian.
You're correct.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the correct way to refer to it still. But I mean, like you said, it's been on SNL. I've seen it on news sites. We've had requests from podcasts who wouldn't normally cover sharks who are asking us to talk about this. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is all over.
I wanted to sort of dive into some of the main theories around how Charlotte got pregnant, given that, you know, there isn't a male ray in the tank with her. And there are a couple of theories, some kind of more plausible than others. I think the first one, and possibly the one that was most popular kind of right in the beginning.
Oh, dear God. Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we're going into that. Is that Charlotte was actually impregnated by a shark, because there was another shark in the tank with her, right?
So there is not another stingray in the tank, but there are other animals in the tank.
Yeah.
And some people were saying, well, clearly she is pregnant with a hybrid of a round stingray and the small sharks that are in the tank, and that is cuckoo bananas insane nonsense. Just so let me briefly explain why. First of all, there's no evidence for this that's been provided other than the stingray had some bite marks on her that look like they're about the size of the shark's mouth. I don't know about you, but I bite lots of things that I don't get pregnant. Food, for example.
Sorry, I just got an impression of you just walking around in your daily life biting everything as you're going along.
This is just unbelievably, ridiculously silly, preposterous, impossible. And that's because the sharks and round stingrays have been separated by hundreds of millions of years of evolution. A comparable separation of evolution is humans and king cobras. What would happen, without being gross here, just thinking like a biologist, what would happen if a human attempted to mate with a king cobra? It would not result in a half-human, half-cobra. It would result in a very confused cobra, but the boy bits and the girl bits would not line up properly, so that's... And then the sperm and eggs would not line up properly and would not fit together. And there's different numbers of chromosomes. So even if somehow the rest of that worked, it could not possibly result in a baby. And the same is true of sharks and rays. This is silly. This is ridiculous. I can't believe how many people are saying it. I can't believe how many are people saying, but scientists don't know everything. Don't say something's impossible. Some things are impossible. It's okay to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can sort of see where people's brains went on this, because a human and a cobra, you know, seem very, very different, seem wildly different. Mm-hmm. Whereas a shark and a ray, you know, they're both cartilaginous fishes. So you can sort of see how people sort of put two and two together. Mm-hmm. But we're definitely not going to get little shark ray babies, you know, swimming around that tank anytime soon.
No. And a really annoying thing that I often got in reply on social media to this is, but what about this animal that's called a shark ray? That's a shark ray is a common name for a bowmouth guitar fish. It is definitely a ray. It is definitely not a shark. It is definitely not a half shark, half ray. They are just called shark rays because they're sort of thick for rays. They're not half shark, half ray hybrids. Common names are not helpful here.
Yeah. But I can see how that would cause confusion. I can, because, you know, you do have people calling things shark rays. Mm-hmm. And to someone without a biological background, or even, you know, someone who just doesn't really know sharks and rays very well, I can see them sort of putting two and two together. But it's safe to say that that theory has definitely, you know, been put to bed, shall we say. So in our kind of detective work,
yes,
we can cross that one out. So Barry the shark, or whoever it was in the tank, we can take him off our suspect list. But another theory that I've seen is one of sperm storage,
yes,
which isn't, you know, wildly out there. So the idea that Charlotte at some point could have had some fun with another stingray.
Yeah.
And then just decided to leave that until she was ready to be a mom.
Yeah, so long-term sperm storage after a mating event does happen. And the theory for this is just as he said, of I've gone through all the trouble of mating, now is not really a great time for me to be pregnant. So the female can just store the sperm and then become pregnant later at a time that's better, environmental conditions or whatever. And the record for this is just under 4 years from mating to pregnancy.
Wow.
And that took place in an aquarium. A similar situation where a female shark became pregnant when there was not a male shark around, but there used to be a male shark around years ago. So this does happen. Based on what I have seen of this particular storefront aquarium, there was not ever a male round stingray in there, so we don't think that's what happened here, but that's certainly biologically possible.
Yeah, so there's no evidence to suggest that Charlotte would have, you know, potentially come across a mate at that point. But it can happen,
right,
you know. So unlike our kind of shark ray hybrids, this is actually a thing that can and does happen.
This is actually a thing that can and does happen, yes.
Do we know why females might do this? Is there like a particular reason as to why they might store sperm?
So mating for sharks is somewhat of a traumatic experience. That female shark skin tends to be about twice as thick as male shark skin. Males will bite down in order to make sure that they can remain close enough to the female to mate for the entire event of the mating. And it makes sense to me that a female shark would want to not waste the fact that mating had already occurred and have to go through it again. And sometimes just now is not a great time to become pregnant.
Yeah. So it's almost like wait until a time when circumstances were better, essentially.
When circumstances were better, yes.
But as we've said, this probably didn't happen in Charlotte's case, which then leads us on to theory number three, which is the one that I wanted to spend a little bit more time on because it's cool.
Yeah, very cool.
So, our third and final theory in the mystery of Charlotte the Pregnant Stingray is the biological phenomenon that is parthenogenesis. And I wondered if we could start off by just explaining what on earth I'm talking about there.
Sure. So parthenogenesis occurs when females get pregnant without mating. And instead of the babies being a mix of the DNA of a mom and a dad, they are the same DNA as the mom.
Hello, editing Isla here. Apologies for the very brief interruption to this podcast episode. I just wanted to jump in here and add a little bit of detail onto what David said there because I think it's worth going a little bit deeper into the actual biology of parthenogenesis because it is super interesting and very, very cool. So, like David said just then, typically in sexual species, the offspring will have half of its DNA from the mum and half of its DNA from the dad. So, usually we have two sex cells, the male sex cell and the female sex cell, and each one has half the number of chromosomes required to produce a viable embryo. So, this is why the sperm has to fertilize the egg, because the two halves have to come together in order to produce viable offspring to create the required two sets of chromosomes. But in parthenogenesis, the female sex cell is able to double its own chromosome count, still producing a viable embryo without being fertilized. And this is where parthenogenesis gets its name, with the first half, parthenos, coming from the Greek word for virgin, and the latter half, genesis, meaning origin in Greek, so virgin origin. So I just thought that was really cool, and it was kind of important to jump in here and sort of explain that a little bit. But anyway, back to your episode with David.
This is notably what happens in Jurassic Park when they splice in the amphibian DNA, and this is life finds a way. Don't worry, we don't have any male dinosaurs, they can't get pregnant. Well, then, how are there? This is the plot of Jurassic Park. This has been seen in a lot of different animals, including many species of sharks and a few species of rays. It's first documented in aquariums, which makes sense because those are animals are healthy. And they're thriving, but there's maybe not a large population of their species there. This was first discovered with bonnethead sharks at a zoo aquarium in Omaha, Nebraska, in the United States, the sort of the middle of the country. They had several female bonnethead sharks in the tank for years and years, and one day people came to work and there were a bunch of baby bonnethead sharks, despite there being no males. And they went, "That's weird." And they did a genetic test and found that all the babies were genetic replicas of one of the moms. She had gotten pregnant without the aid of a male and engaged in parthenogenesis. And this has since been seen with a bunch of different species of sharks, and rays. It was actually documented in the wild once that I know of, possibly more times, with critically endangered small-toothed sawfish. And that's sort of sad when that happens because it means that female thought she was not going to encounter a male. What the, generally speaking, the purpose in wild animals of sexual reproduction is twofold: to increase the population of your species to have more to replace yourself, and to increase the genetic diversity of your species. That's why we have the mix of the DNA of mom and dad. And that's why inbreeding is bad. But if females are dying or they don't think they're going to encounter a male, sometimes they can just become pregnant, so at least they'll replace themselves. But that would, we believe, would not happen in the wild unless something is wrong. Sort of a last-ditch effort.
Yeah, so it's like pull the safety cord kind of move
Yes.
to sort of make sure that you're still passing on your genes in some way, even if it's not the best possible route.
Correct.
It sounds like, well, I guess there's sort of two reasons as to why we don't have much evidence for it in the wild. One might be that it's just really hard to catch that happening in the wild.
So it was discovered with DNA. Yeah, it was discovered by comparing the DNA of newborn babies with the DNA of known mothers in the area. So we're not going to discover that in the wild unless we have a genetic sample of all the babies and all the moms, which we don't.
Yeah, that would be take a very long time to do. It's almost near impossible. But we also see it in captivity quite a lot, you know, with healthy females. I guess my kind of next question is, does that have any impact on the offspring?
That's a great question, and I'll say I don't know for sure, but I expect not. It's not great for the species. It's not helping the species, but an animal that's in captivity its whole life isn't helping the species much anyway. But it is the individual babies, I believe, are perfectly healthy, and they're basically have whatever adaptations to the world that their moms have.
Yeah, so it doesn't, I mean, especially in captivity, I suppose, when you can actually like control those circumstances and you can sometimes control the genetic diversity and trying to improve that like later on down the line, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But in the don't kind of want to see it happening in the wild, it indicates that something is wrong.
Right.
Yes. And if they're producing, you know, offspring that have, you know, the same genetic makeup as themselves, does that is that the same thing as cloning? Because I've seen people talk about this.
So my population genetics expert friends, of which I am not a population geneticist, but my friends and colleagues who work more with DNA and genetics assure me that it is not the same thing as cloning, and they have tried to explain to me why and why it matters that we don't call it cloning. And I'll tell you, the difference there is so fuzzy that I don't get it. But people who know more than me about this say it's not really cloning, even though the impact is kind of similar.
So it would be wrong to kind of say that Charlotte's sort of creating little mini clones of herself, but she is, or most likely, reproducing asexually.
Yes.
Yeah. So is it quite safe to say that that is the most likely theory as to why she's pregnant, or are there other theories?
I think that's by far the most likely theory. That is the two possible things that could be happening here are parthenogenesis and sperm storage, and I believe there has not been a male in that tank in a very long time, if ever. So it's almost certainly parthenogenesis. It's definitely not humans mating with a king cobra and making a cobra person.
That's quite a terrifying thought anyway,
It
but
is. I feel like I've seen that movie on an airplane at some point.
yeah, I mean, I'm sure that movie is going to come along at some point. I think we've probably just planted the seeds for someone to create that.
I will tell you that the director of Sharknado read my post explaining why Charlotte the Stingray is not a Sharkray hybrid, and he said that he's getting some ideas from it. So I apologize in advance.
We have you to blame for when, you know, terrifying shark ray hybrid tornadoes hit Hollywood. That's brilliant. But yeah, so that is our most popular theory, but I guess we probably won't know for certain until Charlotte actually has her babies. And then I guess we could do some sort of genetic testing and that'll tell us for sure what's happened.
Yes, that'll clear it up really, really, really quickly.
Okay, cool. So we've kind of gone through all the major theories there. You can see, I can sort of see the link between parthenogenesis and Mary Magdalene. I can see the parallels that people are drawing there.
Yeah, the first time I saw that claim, I thought it was fairly clever, the first time. And now it's just sort of an annoying cliche. But yes, that's basically the story. There, except there was no divine inspiration involved and not just DNA.
Sure, yeah. And I have to ask this because I think people will be wondering this, but obviously we've seen it across, we see have evidence for parthenogenesis across the animal kingdom, but is there any evidence for parthenogenesis in humans?
That's a great question. I don't know. I feel like I've read somewhere that it's possible. But I don't know for sure if that's true or how reliable that is.
Sure. I feel like it's something that would be huge news if it had been scientifically proven.
I feel like it would be huge news if it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't know. I will refer you to geneticists on that one.
Okay. Maybe we'll get some geneticists on and we'll kind of explore it in more detail. But in short, parthenogenesis is a really super cool phenomenon that we find in animals. It's amazing.
It is. Yes, and it's so frustrating to me that people are not talking about the actual really cool thing that happened and are instead talking about nonsense and attacking scientists who point out that it's nonsense. Like, what really happened here is interesting and cool.
It is. It is super interesting and cool. I did see one really interesting take on it. I read an article while I was doing the research for this episode, and they were saying that they think it's actually pretty badass that Charlotte's just kind of stepping out and doing things for herself. Which I do like that take.
Good for her.
Good for her.
Yeah.
As we're recording this, I don't believe Charlotte has given birth yet.
As of this morning, she hadn't.
No, but we've got, you know, 2 weeks before when we're recording this and when the episode will come out. So she might have had her babies at that point. Do we know what kind of timeline we're looking at there?
I am not sure. It has been remarkably difficult to get information from this aquarium facility. It is small. It is not AZA certified. It is not part of existing scientific networks of or education networks of other aquariums. So
okay, it's a whole thing. This whole story is wild. It definitely.
It's great.
Yeah, it's grown arms and legs.
This, and did you see the story last year with the goblin shark in the Mediterranean?
I did not. Please do fill me in.
Oh my goodness. So brief amusing aside here, some scientists published a range extension, which means scientists think that this species only lives here, here, and here, but we found it over there, so be aware of that and maybe protect them there. And it turned out that their range extension data was based on a photograph that a citizen had taken and sent to them of a goblin shark, a dead goblin shark on a beach. And it turned out it was not a dead goblin shark. It was a plastic toy.
Oh dear.
Oh dear, indeed. So this became a whole thing. This got picked up in the New York Times. And before this shark ray hybrid thing, that was my favorite low stakes shark science controversy. And this might be replacing it.
What was it even a toy of? Was it a toy of a shark?
Oh, it was a toy goblin shark.
Okay.
But it was, you know, it was not what baby goblin sharks look like. It looked like a small adult goblin shark. And we were able to identify even the specific model of toy that it was. And like a bunch of people started posting pictures holding up that toy because they had it. Yeah, that was also a whole thing.
I mean, at least it was the same species, the toy of the actual species that they thought it was going to be.
Yes. It was definitely a goblin shark. Yes.
That's amazing, though. And I need to get my hands on that toy. I love goblin sharks, and I didn't know that they had toys of goblin sharks, so I definitely need to get my hand on that.
Oh, there's a few of them, yeah.
Oh, incredible. I will be Googling that after this. But no, that's funny. But often, you know, oftentimes this bears, you know, discussing is because we know so little about sharks, and we often get so little opportunities to get data on species like that. You know, sometimes we are going off pictures of random things, or like, you know, even a bits of a shark, or a very fuzzy picture from very far away, or, you know, even sometimes just word of mouth, just trying to understand their populations and their movements and their distribution. So it can be tricky sometimes, but
it can,
at least it was the same species.
And they, in that photo, that it's this story has layers too, that they said, oh, but we included a rock for scale, but it didn't say how big the rock was.
Oh no.
just amazing.
That is phenomenal. How big was it, just out of interest? Like, how big's the toy? Oh, that big. Oh
yeah.
Listeners can't see that, but David is holding up
the size of a pinky, less than the size of a pinky.
Yeah, like finger length. Oh wow. Okay, so
yeah, it was real small. It is. That's just. It's just not what they look like.
Like, perception is everything, really.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. That's a wonderful story. But obviously, you know, Charlotte really took the social media world by storm. As we said, the media, even we're still talking about it. Why do you think it became such a big story, you know, from this tiny little aquarium in a mall, in a shopping mall.
Part of why this took the world by storm is because it sounds so weird. Like, people might not know the nuances of the biology of fishes, but they know that pregnancy requires a boy and a girl, you know, without the aid of modern medical technology or things like that. So a female pregnant without the aid of a male, that gets people's attention. The often quite hackneyed connections to the story of Jesus and Mary made some of it spread in some media publications. A lot of people making the same jokes over and over and over and over and over again on social media helped it to spread. But everyone knows what a stingray is part of this. So a weird story about some deep sea cave fish or something would not have the same impact because people wouldn't know what it is. So one of the things that I do with my research is what's called media content and discourse analysis. And that's looking at how stories are covered. So not just me reading a newspaper and complaining and saying, oh my God, this is so wrong, but scientifically quantifying and measuring how wrong it is, why it's wrong, if there are consistent patterns in the wrongness. And this is a big thing with sharks that, as you know, they're ecologically important animals that face very serious conservation challenges, and that is hardly ever mentioned in media coverage. It's you would be hard-pressed to find another group of animals that are so well-known, and the most important parts about them are not well-known. And this is a consistent problem.
Yes, yes, it is definitely. But, I mean, in kind of spinning this story on its head a little bit, mm-hmm. Do we think that the attention that Charlotte got, do we think that that can maybe bring people a little bit more into the world of sharks and rays and, you know, encourage them to learn more about them?
I hope so. I'll tell you, for 20 years, people have been telling me, oh, don't worry that someone initially got interested in this because of wrong information. Now they're interested, and now they'll be a useful ally for evidence-based conservation. And I have never once seen this happen, and I've been looking for 20 years. Is it possible? Sure. But I am not optimistic. This is people have learned their thing about sharks and rays this month, and it was wrong.
But if our listeners are sitting at home and they're kind of thinking, you know, I have friends who were enamored with this story, you know, is there any way that they can build on that to share, you know, more accurate information about sharks and rays?
Yeah, well, I'd encourage them to visit the Save Our Seas World of Sharks page. It has a lot of great information there, some of it written by me, and as well as several of your other guests. You can follow Save Our Seas on social media. You can follow me on social media at Why Sharks Matter. On everything, I share ways that important news that people need to know from reliable sources, ways that people can get involved and help that are data-driven and evidence-based. You are unlikely to get a good idea of what's going on with a complicated and nuanced story in the natural world from your friend from high school who got a D in biology on Facebook.
Yeah, and I think there's a really important message in this as well, is to not believe everything that you see on social media, to sort of use your critical thinking and investigate that for yourself.
Yeah. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence and not no evidence.
And also, if you are in the US, maybe hold back on visiting that aquarium because I think they've been a little bit overwhelmed with visitors.
Yeah, they are. Those poor aquarium docents and volunteers have been having a rough time.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw there was like a queue out the door, which is just crazy. Well, thank you so much, David, for answering these questions and talking about it again. I know you've been talking about it a lot in the last couple of weeks and really appreciate it, but it was a good excuse to do a deep dive into parthenogenesis, which is, as we've said, a very cool behavior. And yeah, and we will leave links in the show notes to how to find you and also links to everything that we've mentioned in this episode here. So please do go and check them out. But yeah, David, thank you so much for coming back on. It was fantastic to have you back on again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It was nice to be here.
This episode was brought to you by the Save Our Seas Foundation. It was hosted and produced by me, Isla Hodgson. Our amazing visuals are by Jamie Silva. Our beautiful logo is by Nicola Poulos. And the wonderful jingle you can hear right now is by David Knight. An enormous thank you again to David for coming onto the podcast and delving into the mystery of Charlotte the Stingray with us. If you would like to follow David, you can do so across all social media apps. He is at Why Sharks Matter. And you can also buy his book of the same name. It is a fantastic book. I would highly recommend getting your hands on it if you haven't done so already. And there will be links in the show notes as to all of David's work and how you can find out more about him. You can access the show notes and an accessible summary of this episode by heading to saveourseas.com/worldofsharks/podcast. And thank you at home for listening. As always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, if you want to submit a topic for us to cover or a question for us to answer, we love hearing from you. You can do that by emailing isla@saveourseas.com or by finding us on social media. We are at Save Our Seas Foundation on Instagram and at Save Our Seas on Twitter. Alrighty, have a jawsome week and we will see you next time.